She rode the elevator to the top with a young Oriental couple who seemed to be honeymooners, smiling at each other, oblivious of the weather and of the city spreading around them as the elevator rose higher and higher. The wind was so strong at the top that Jane feared her umbrella would be torn from her grasp if she opened it, so she hovered in the scant shelter offered by the elevator tube. "Where's Dan?" she wondered, glancing at her wristwatch. It was 9:15. Late as usual. She spun around, and he was standing before her, plastic rain hat pulled low over his face, trench coat collar turned up, grinning like a teenager. Jane flung her arms around his neck, and they kissed until even the honeymooners noticed.
"I thought you were dead," she said when they separated slightly.
"I thought you wouldn't give a damn."
"Oh, Dan, let's stop fighting. No matter what's happened in the past, no matter what's going to happen in the future, I love you. I can't fight it anymore. I love you."
"And I've loved you ever since I first met you, Jane. All these years I've tried to hide it, even from myself. But I love you. You're the only woman I've ever loved." Over lunch at the Towers restaurant, Jane brought him up to date on the GEC's plans and politics, and the Mafia's interference, and Jeff Robertson's murder.
"So Rafe has actually declined the council chair, leaving the way clear for Vasily to be elected," she was saying.
Dan frowned at the news. "That means Malik's in with them."
"I've been wondering about that. I don't think he's working for the crime syndicate, but..."
"They wouldn't let him take the chair away from their own man if he wasn't."
"Maybe he doesn't realize it?"
"My left foot. He's in with the bastards, all right. He's working hand in glove with the people who murdered Jeff Robertson." Jane stared at him across their little table.
"What can we do?"
Dan grinned at her. "Same thing that the Founding Fathers did when they were writing the Constitution. Trust the people."
"What do you mean?"
"We're going public, Jane, with the whole sorry tale. It's the only way to smoke these snakes out from under their rocks."
"You mean you want to tell the public about the greenhouse cliff? Dan, you can't."
"We've got to. The longer this program stays in the dark, the longer the crooks have to worm their way in, and the longer Malik has to set himself up as global dictator." She shook her head warily. Reaching into his jacket pocket, Dan took out a holo cube. Holding it between his thumb and forefinger, he said, "There's enough data here to blow Gaetano out of the water. But what good is it if the people you give it to are working for the son of a bitch? All it'll do is get you killed."
"But Dan, if you reveal the news about the greenhouse to the public, people will panic. The consequences could be disastrous."
"You don't think they'll panic once the GEC does release the news?"
"Vasily is working out plans to orchestrate the information."
"Leak it out slowly. A drip at a time, like the Chinese water torture." Obviously displeased with his words, Jane replied,
"Isn't that better than throwing everybody headfirst into the deep end of the pool?"
"No," said Dan firmly. "This is literally a sink-or-swim situation, Jane, darling. We've got to throw a strong light on it, now."
"You're mixing metaphors," she muttered.
"But my heart is pure."
"I can't agree with you about this."
"That's okay," he said cheerfully. "All I need is to know that you'll be on the right side when the shit hits the fan. I'll do the rest without implicating you."
"You're going to disappear again?"
"For a little while. I've got to."
"I had thought..."
Her voice trailed off. "Thought what?"
"Can't we just chuck the whole business and go off by ourselves? Nobody's going to be able to solve all the world's problems, Dan. Not you, not me, not all of us together. We've slaved at it all our lives, and what has it gotten us except heartache? Can't we just run away and live the rest of our lives in peace and be happy together?"
"I'm a fugitive from justice, remember?"
"I can fix that. You wouldn't even have to face a trial if I testified that I went to Alphonsus with you willingly."
He leaned back in his chair and studied her. "Where would we go, Jane? Tetiaroa? It'll be underwater in a few more years. Geneva? What'll the Swiss do when the snow on the Alps melts down and floods their valleys? Rome? New York? Where?" For long moments, Jane said nothing. She sat like a living statue, auburn hair perfectly coiffed, green eyes staring at Dan. Beyond her, the restaurant windows showed that the drizzle had turned into a hard, slanting rain. The sky, the city beneath, The whole world seemed gray and cold.
"You're right,"
she said, in a voice so low Dan could barely hear her, even though the restaurant was nearly empty and very quiet. Dan sighed. "For years, I've said that when the going gets tough, the tough get going to where the going's easier. But there's no place to go, Janie. This is one fight we can't avoid." She nodded reluctantly.
"It's just, I thought it would be so good if we could be together."
"We will be." He reached across the table and took her hand.
"We'll be together, Jane.
There's nothing in the world I want more. We'll be together, come hell or high water." Her eyes went wide. Then she burst into laughter.
"You certainly know how to choose your words."
He laughed, too, thinking how good it was to see her happy, even if it was only for a moment. It's a myth that sea level is the same everywhere around the world, thought Amory McGee. Bending over his tabletop display, its light throwing weird shadows across his angular face, he saw the world's oceans and seas as a living, breathing creature in constant motion, flexing, reaching, writhing with currents. Gia is the wrong name for this planet of ours, he thought as the display showed him the shifting patterns of ocean currents all around the world. The computer display was created from the sensors of 3 geostationary satellites, continuously and simultaneously. Ours is an ocean world. Poseidon is a better namesake than any Earth goddess. McGee was a solitary man, acknowledged by those in the Oceanographic Institute who had to work with him as a genius, but a prickly one. "Sea level," he muttered to himself, pushing his large owlish eyeglasses back into place. They kept slipping down his thin, sharp nose when he bent over the display table. No such thing as sea level, not really. The Pacific's higher than the Atlantic most places. Of course, it's much bigger. And the Arctic could get itself trapped behind the Bering Shelf. It's been so low in the past. Probably triggered the Ice Age that way. He often talked to himself, alone in his laboratory. No one contradicted him. He liked that. His eyes focused on the Gulf of Mexico. Now there's a perfect example of what I mean. Trade winds blow the length of the Atlantic and pile the water up in the Gulf until it's considerably higher than the ocean itself. That's what generates the Gulf Stream, of course. Sea levels were rising, and much faster than anyone had anticipated. McGee had faithfully sent his reports to his superiors at the Institute. What they did with them, he neither knew nor cared. His interest was in how the oceans were working, how Poseidon was behaving himself. Once in a while, he thought idly that at the rate the sea was rising, they would have to abandon these buildings. The idea of moving filled him with such anxiety, though, that he usually pushed those thoughts out of his conscious mind as soon as they arose. He flicked his fingers across the remote keyboard he held in his hand, and data points appeared on the display. Earthquake predictions from the people over in California. Most people thought that earthquakes on the seafloor were nothing to worry about. McGee knew better. His favorite reading was first-hand accounts by the survivors of tsunamis. He enjoyed picturing the wall of water that would sweep miles inland, crushing and drowning everything in its path. "Serves them all right," he groused. "Poseidon is nobody to take lightly." A new earthquake prediction had appeared since the last time he surveyed the display. "Somebody's calling for a quake in the Gulf of Mexico," he saw, surprised. "That's unusual." Tapping on the handheld, he saw that the prediction called for a deep trembler, Richter scale 7 or higher. Big one. Working his remote control again, he saw that under the right circumstances, a considerable tsunami could spread from the locus of the seafloor quake. "Florida?" he asked, pecking at the keys. But the tidal wave petered out before it could swamp Florida's west coast. "That's good, I suppose," he muttered, feeling slightly disappointed. "Florida's already got enough problems with the sea level rise. Lots of expensive condominiums are being emptied out, I hear." The seafloor contours might guide the tsunami onto the Texas-Louisiana coast, he realized. New Orleans is going to be hard hit if these numbers are right. He tapped one more key,